It was only a couple of months ago that we were gathered right here in this church for the circuit meeting that was in September, the beginning of the Methodist Connectional Year. And we were talking about church buildings. We were talking about the space project and how that has not really worked, and all the other building projects that the church or the circuit had embarked on. Many a church building, and even more of their contents, are dedicated to the work and the glory of God. And this church building here is no different. We can say that the wall is a work of sacred art, and that was constructed, it was constructed to express something that we as God's people have learned about the majesty and the loveliness and the extravagant sheltering of the care of God. We think about all the memories, and I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago again I came here, and Colin was there. We met Colin, and we were talking, and Colin said he started coming to this church at the age of 3. Is that right, Colin? Yeah. Yeah, 3 years old. And I don't know how old Colin is today, but Colin found not only God in this place, he found his beautiful wife, as you know, and he raised their children all in this church. And I'm sure they have a host of beautiful memories. And what would you say this building means to Colin and his wife? The building and all the prayers that have been poured into it over the years have been our best attempt to respond to this incongruous, inexplicable love. Our best attempt to manifest what we believe. So if we were to lose this church, it would be a great loss for so many people, not this Colin and his wife. And I'm sure some people have experienced that. Those who used to go to, is it Oakwood? You know, those who used to go to Winchmore, you know, having to lose their church is something, because there's a lot. There's community, there's family, there's everything, you know, precious that people hold in their memories. So the passage that is before us today in Mark chapter 13, we are told that the Jewish people loved their temple. And for them, there was an essential understanding that God dwelt within the Holy of Holies in the temple itself. The temple was undoubtedly central to their faith. Just as we speak of churches as being God's house and have a sense of God's presence within the church, so it is to the temple. And some might even argue that their notion of holiness of the temple far outstrips our notions of our church buildings. And so this is possibly one of the reasons we hear the disciples in a gospel reading marveling at the temple. They marvel at the majesty and the grandeur of the temple, the great stones and wondrous architecture of the temple was a reflection of God's power and glory. Can we think about the great stones and wondrous architecture of cathedrals and minsters in the United Kingdom? Did I read somewhere on Facebook that you guys went on a trip to St. Albans recently? Yeah? And how was that?
Amazing.
It was good. How did you find the building?
Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing. Yes. And what else can you see of the building, right? Beautiful place, isn't it? So, have you visited any other cathedrals or minsters around the country? Lots. Which ones? Sorry? Cambridge. Yeah. Sorry?
Worcester.
Worcester Cathedral, okay? Fantastic. Lincoln. Lovely. That's good. Liverpool.
St. Paul's.
Sorry?
St. Paul's.
St. Paul's, yes. You know what? I used to sell tickets for St. Paul's Cathedral. I used to work for a travel agency. And for part of my job was selling tickets to people who wanted to visit St. Paul's Cathedral. And it was really amazing how many people from around the world just want to come to visit this cathedral. Not only St. Paul's, but a lot of these cathedrals around the country. Me, myself, I was ordained as a minister, which they say is bigger than a cathedral, you know. And that was just a very, very awesome moment. And whenever I have the opportunity to travel around the country and I end up in a place like that, I just want to find a place where they have the candles. And it's kind of like my little pilgrimage. I'll just go and light a candle and say my little prayer. That's what I like about the grandeur and the everything of this beautiful edifices. Yes. So Jesus is arguing that the building itself does nothing for God's glory in and of itself, especially if used for the wrong purposes. Can we agree with that? Yeah? Because those buildings are meant for the edification and the glory of God. But if they're used for the wrong purposes, then they are very kind of useless. And I know there was something I read some time ago about, I think it was Canterbury Cathedral, that some people wanted to go and use it for, to do some kind of like disco thing or something, and there was a big kind of argument that no, we cannot use this place for that kind of thing. The church is open, the church wants people to come and do things within the church, but that was kind of like going a bit too far. So the disciples found it difficult to understand what Jesus was talking about. Whilst they stood above, Jesus has been proclaiming another message. And you may recall that at the end of the 12th chapter of Mark's Gospel, which was in the lectionary reading last week, I know it was remembered on Sunday, so I don't know whether, you know, preachers did go according to the lectionary, but it was in the lectionary reading last week. Jesus attacks the temple system, which exploits the widows, devouring their houses, whilst the scribes and the Pharisees build their personal privileges and wealth. And for Jesus, the temple itself, rather than being representative of God and God's love, has reduced the essence of the faith to ruins. So continuously through the Old Testament, there is a voice crying out for the widows and the orphans, for the poor and the alien, for loving God was not simply about higher sideshows, but about helping others. And Jesus' whole ministry has concern for others as its heart. Healing and wholeness, inclusion and reconciliation. It is a reassertion of what is often found in the mouths of the psalmists and the prophets. It is not new teaching. And today, Jesus' prophecy of the destruction of the temple was yet another counterpoint to the way things had been done and who God's concern was especially for. So Jesus' prediction was deeply challenging for the disciples, as it would be for us today. I have heard from people who have been to the Holy Land and seen pictures of just how big those stones really are. And I've seen pictures of a place called the Herodian block of stone, very tall and humongous. This is why the disciples were agog and amazed. So this certainly makes sense, that if suddenly, you know, you can just bring these buildings down, it's going to be really devastating and disappointing. I am sure that you have heard the slogan, the bigger, the better, the more, the merrier. So those hearing the story of Jesus' prediction, completion of the destruction of the temple may have wondered where things were heading, given the situation under Nero, and Jesus' words of wars and suffering may have felt more real than he moved in their predicament. We know in hindsight that Jesus' words had come true, because in the year 70 AD, the Romans did destroy the temple in Jerusalem. And when Jesus spoke these words to the disciples, he was continuing the task of reorientating the disciples in their faith to give them the resilience and the hope that they would need as they faced an uncertain future. God is not contained within even the walls of the temple. God's love transcends specific places and is found in people. Yet for Jesus, his prophecy was not about the end, but rather new beginnings. New beginnings. His words were words of hope in the face of great suffering and tribulation. God's glory and God's future are not contained within the walls of a building, for the hope of God is founded in community and in love and in the promise of a future beyond the suffering which people might currently be experiencing. I believe that most importantly, we should listen carefully to Jesus' critique of the temple system and consider how Jesus challenged accepted practices in that time. And of course, it is true, and we don't live in the same context that the people who first heard these words did. We do not have the same kind of reference points. But either way, much like those who would have first heard these words, it may be entirely understandable that we might find ourselves looking into the wrong direction as the sorts of things Jesus speaks of now begin to unfold. Our attention almost cannot help but be drawn to the wars and the rumors of wars that are all around us, to earthquakes and floods and famines, which have been the headlines on our media feeds and our television screens and the radios for as long as we know it. So I began this sermon talking about buildings and cathedrals and the great stones and wondrous architecture. I will finish with this reflection of Jesus, that the life of God's people was founded not on bricks and mortar, but on the love of people, the love for widows and orphans, the love for strangers and aliens. Bricks and mortar, I will reiterate, is important because we do need a base to operate. When we had the COVID-19 pandemic, we did struggle to have church online. Church online has become a real blessing, but we do also value coming together in person, in flesh and blood, to meet, to laugh, to worship God together. So the building is important. But we must not shy away from our calling to love and to be compassionate and to do all the good things that God has called us to do. Jesus' challenge to the disciples and the prediction of the destruction of the temple were not ultimately about dismantling God, but about new beginnings in the faith. I believe that part of the gift that is ours to receive today from the words like those on the Bible passage is a promise and a certainty that even though we don't fully understand how, in, and through the worst that happens, God is still active in our lives. God is still active in all that we do. Or perhaps words like this call us to simply stand still in the certainty that in fact, no matter what, we are called to always keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, who who is the author and finisher of our faith. We are called to always keep our hearts and our minds open to what God may be doing. Without a doubt, we are urged now to remember that there is always something greater undergirding it all. Whatever the future may hold, the gift of God's love and grace and very presence is always going to be there. Indeed, I imagine that's what we are meant to be watching for all along, and Jesus' words today should be taken as an opportunity to look inwards at our faith and also to look outwards towards those whom God is calling us to love in the community around us, the widows and the orphans, the aliens and the strangers, God's people, all of God's people, the lovable, the unlovable. As people seeking to be renewed in our faith and commitment and praying for a revival of our congregation, we continue to step out in faith. And this will involve taking risks that move us beyond our comfort zones. God's promises are always bigger than our experiences of faith. God's grace reaches out to all people who are to be alert and watchful, and no better time than we are to be alert and watchful. In a couple of weeks' time, we will start Advent, that season of watchful waiting for the coming of Christ. We are to rely fully on God, and we are to care for our neighbors as ourselves. Christ calls us, first of all, to prepare our own hearts by paying attention to the presence of God wherever we are, and living in that presence every day. This is indeed good news. In the name of the Father.